Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Fake out. John Williams out today. John Hansen in until 3 o'clock. So I want to get some things straight before we start the show today. We're awaiting the sentencing of one of the most hotly watched trials in Chicago this century, and that ruling could split the city. Our longest-serving, most influential alderman facing corruption charges. Our executive branch of the federal government in a spitball fight with the legislative branch of the government. All this while the government is shut down with no end in sight. At least a quarter shut down. The Bears are done. Both residents of the United Center can't find a win. They got the Cubs convention starting this weekend with a little controversy about how a billionaire family isn't willing to spend a couple million on some new players. The White Sox got an offer on one of the biggest free agents. They haven't heard anything back, but at least the sky isn't falling. Well, oh wait, falling from the sky ever so shortly, up to 10 inches of snow. So happy Friday, I guess, but we are here to get you through it on WGN 312-981-7200 if you'd like to join the conversation. We're going to start things right off with the big news story of the day, at least here locally in Chicago, of course, the sentencing trial for Jason Van Dyke. And we're going to go to Eric Rung right now. Eric Rung is on the line, and he's been covering the courthouse all day. Eric, thanks so much for coming on this morning. You there with us right now, Eric? Actually, we're going to go with Stacy. Stacy, you're on 720 WGN. Stacy Sinclair from the Chicago Tribune. I think Eric had to run back into the courtroom. Stacy, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, we had Eric on for a second. I think he had to run away for a bit. But Stacy, I wanted to ask you where we are kind of at. We've had some emotional testimony so far today. And I wanted to ask you, walk us through a couple of the witnesses. What prosecution witnesses have they been bringing up in the sentencing trial?
So far there have been four witnesses called by the prosecution. All of them filed complaints about the way they say Jason Van Dyke treated them while pulling them over for, you know, a minor traffic violation. And it has been really emotional. They're all men. Some of them have cried on the stand, admitted to being nervous. It's very hard to be a witness in this case, no matter which side calls you, because all of a sudden you're on TV, you know, the whole world's hearing your story. It's rough.
I also wanted to ask, obviously these witnesses painting not a great picture of Officer Van Dyke, alleging racist comments being made. Were any of these witnesses brought during the original trial?
No, and that's because their allegations have nothing to do with the shooting of Laquan McDonald. So they wouldn't have been allowed as witnesses during the phase of whether he was guilty or not for shooting Laquan McDonald. But because you can bring in so-called prior bad acts before sentencing to sort of give the judge a broader picture of who the prosecution says Jason Van Dyke is, that's sort of the role they play right now.
One of the men that they brought in was arrested by Van Dyke for a DUI, and I noticed the defense attorney is trying to mention, how drunk were you? What was your blood alcohol content? One of the men has been taking many pills for PTSD, anxiety, things like that, and the defense attorney's talking about, well, was the PTSD really related to Van Dyke, or perhaps something that happened in the military? Is that the defense's, that's their goal right now, is to try and just poke holes in the credibility of these witnesses, right?
Right. I mean, they're trying to, and they're doing it, though, very, very gently. They're trying to show the judge that, there's more to this story than you realize, that nothing's just black and white, that kind of thing. So yes, they did, the gentleman who had the DUI, they said, but you did have a DUI, you did blow, you did plead guilty to that. And, the gentleman with PTSD, he did acknowledge that, yes, I had been diagnosed with PTSD because of an incident that happened when I was in the military, but I didn't have to start taking medication for my PTSD until after my encounter with Jason Van Dyke. And, that same gentleman talked about how he had what sounded very much like, a panic attack on his way to court this morning, and had to take some anxiety medication in order to get on the stand. And you know, and his nerves and his anxiety was so evident during his testimony. I mean, he was crying before he even said his name when he was called as a witness. So it was hard to watch.
Stacey, I wanted to bring you back to the testimony earlier in the day, the arguments back and forth, the more legal in nature. Mm-hmm. This idea that the prosecution mm-hmm. is trying to convince the judge that, in fact, aggravated battery with a firearm is worse than second-degree murder. Walk us through why they are making that argument.
Right. So it's not that they're just trying to convince the judge. That is the way that the statute reads in Illinois, that aggravated battery with a firearm is a higher level felony in Illinois than second degree murder, which, you know, you and I would probably more commonly refer to as manslaughter.
Right.
And so they're saying you have to sentence him for the aggravated battery, which, you know, it carries a longer sentence, and it also means he has to serve 85% of his sentence.
Right. It's mandatory, right?
Right, right. And the defense wants him to be sentenced for the second-degree murder, and that has a lesser, you know, imprisonment time, and it's a 50%. You only have to serve 50% of your sentence under second-degree murder. So that's why they want the second-degree murder standard. And their argument was actually, you know, a pretty thoughtful argument today, and it was that, hey, the jury found that this crime met all the standards of first-degree murder, which is what they had to do as part of their jury instructions, but they found there was a mitigating circumstance that knocked it down to second degree. So they're saying he should be sentenced for the second degree as being the more significant mm-hmm. Primary crime.
And with that, the judge could rule as low as probation.
He could rule as low as probation. I'm betting everything right. that Jason Van Dyke will not get probation.
As you did the judge fire back with questions that might indicate which way he's leaning to deciding, or is he pretty straightforward and just taking in what the arguments are and letting them play out?
You know, Judge Gahan is a longtime veteran judge. He did not ask many questions. I am sure he has researched this topic for, you know, ever since probably the verdict came down. I'm sure he knows what he's going to do. Both sides wrote very long briefs outlining their arguments early this week, and I'm sure the judge has read those as well. So he didn't really ask a lot of questions or show his cards as to which way he is leaning.
All right, we're seeing another witness taking the stand now, and I'll let you get back to work, Stacey. But I just want to know, mm-hmm. is there any indication how many more witnesses there will be? Do we have any idea at all of when this might wrap up and if we'll have a sentence by the end of the day?
You know, everyone expected a sentence today, and I think that could still happen, but the defense is going to have a lot of witnesses. They're going to have a lot of witnesses come in, including Jason Van Dyke's wife and his daughter, and they will talk about his good qualities and the contributions he makes to society. So this could drag on well into the snowstorm, let's
right.
just say that.
Right. Is there an adjournment time, or can the judge extend it? I mean, I imagine the goal is not to go into the weekend not knowing, but, I mean, certainly it could wait. It could be Monday.
Yeah. I mean, the judge can do whatever
right.
he wants, scheduling-wise. Monday, the court is closed
oh, right.
because of Martin Luther King Day, although he could call a special hearing on that day. The judge is one of the hardest-working judges in Cook County, so I think we could be here late into the evening, and he's not one to, you know, like he hasn't called a lunch break. He just constantly keeps everybody working.
Wow.
So.
Well, Stacey, it makes that you're going to be doing your job a lot longer today. We appreciate you coming on here on WGN. Maybe we'll have you on a little later on if we get more updates. But thanks for your time. We appreciate
sure.
it.
Sure. Anytime, right. guys. Bye.
That's Stacey St. Clair from the Chicago Tribune. We're going to take a quick commercial break. By the way, we're going to break this all down a little bit more with Lance Northcutt. He'll be coming in a little bit. Former Cook County prosecutor and law enforcement officer, a partner right now at GWC. That'll be coming up at 1:30. But first, a quick commercial break here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN and a happy Friday afternoon to you. John Hanson in for John Williams until 3 o'clock. So we're waiting on a few things. The sentencing trial underway for Jason Van Dyke. We're keeping an eye on that. We'll, of course, bring you the ruling from the judge whenever we get it live. But you just heard Stacey St. Clair say that it could be a while. We're still on defense witnesses right now. Or, excuse me, prosecution witnesses. Haven't even gotten to defense witnesses. So it could be some time. Also, keeping an eye on this winter storm, which is barreling its way towards the area. Still a couple hours away from that winter storm warning from officially taking effect. But I'm looking at the radar now, and I'm starting to see some snow approaching the Elgin area, the western, northwestern suburbs.
Oh, here we go. Weatherman John Hanson.
Yeah, sorry. I had to break in, Steve. Right. Yeah, and thanks for chiming in. Appreciate that. Even before you officially start, Steve, that was very kind of you. But as I, Steve, I'm looking. I'm zooming out the radar as far as I can. This storm, it's a big one. This goes back all the way to north, south Dakota now.
Soaking California, right? I mean, it's been moving across the country for a couple days. So.
Quite a clip. I was reading some stuff from Tom Skilling in the newspaper that some of the parts of the jet stream were blowing at 150 miles an hour. I don't know if that's faster than normal. It would seem to indicate that that would be, but this is going to be quite an intense storm making its way through the area. But we'd love for you to chime in. Is it snowing near you? 312-981-7200. Sometimes when we talk snow, we just like to commiserate with each other. So feel free to chime in with what you might be doing this weekend with the snowfall here as well. I think it's a stay-inside pajama sort of weekend, but if you're so inclined to help some other people out, the folks from my block, my hood, my city, might give you some really cool opportunities to help out your neighbors. Jamal Cole, the founder, joins us right now. Jamal, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's always great to talk to you. You give such a positive vibe. You do so many great things for the city. You're looking for volunteers, right?
Definitely, man. Tomorrow, Saturday at 11 a.m., we're going to be meeting at the Red Line Station on 79th. And we're going to be helping out a lot of seniors in Chatham. They can't, you know, they're on walkers and they have neuropathy in their wrist. They need help shoveling. So anybody that wants to come out and volunteer their time, we're meeting at 11 a.m. at the 79th and State Red Line.
Jamal, by then there might be 8 inches of snow on the ground. You sure you can handle all this?
Man, we got 100 salts. We got 100 gloves, 100 shovels. And we got God behind us, and we got Dr. Martin Luther King behind us. So what's something simple you can do to make an impact on a city? You do not need a master's degree to shovel snow. You don't need a legal degree to want to get to know your neighbor. So we're going to be doing simple stuff tomorrow, like shoveling snow for seniors.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks out there know that the snow's coming, and they kind of roll their eyes, but they're at least, you know, of an age where they're still able to get the shovel out and do it, or maybe you got a snow blower at home and it's easy for you. So it's easy to forget, Jamal, that a lot of folks in our city don't have those resources to buy something like that, but they're just not physically able to do it. I mean, this is something tangible you can do to make someone's life better.
It's happened throughout history in Chicago as well, where there was like a heat wave in the 90s where a lot of seniors, you know, unfortunately lost their lives. But nowadays we have technology where we can, you know, target specific demographics with specific events, and we can help people better nowadays. So I'm utilizing Facebook, I'm utilizing technology to connect volunteers to the seniors that need help.
Jamal, you've done the shoveling before, right?
I've been doing it for the last 6-7 years in Chatham in my community. Last year, though, there was about 120 people that showed up on 79th and State to help shovel, and they came from as far as Indiana, Edgewater, people from all over. And, John, that's the beauty of these events. You got people from all over the city, all different communities, cultures, genders, religions, all coming together in Chicago to help out people in need. It's beautiful.
Part of the mission of your organization, My Block, My Hood, My City, is not only to take kids from the south and west sides and take them to the north side, take them to downtown, but it's really to encourage people from other neighborhoods to visit new neighborhoods, particularly on the south and west sides, where they may have an opinion of it based on what they see on the media, but it's a way different neighborhood. I just toured the North Lawndale neighborhood for the jam on WCIU and had a great time doing it, saw some awesome places. But I love that you're meeting at the Red Line 79 station, because if you're anywhere along the Red Line or the Purple Line or the Yellow Line, CTA, the trains run like no problem when it's snowy. It's no big deal running with the CTA. So there's no excuse on anyone on the north side not to come down to 79th Street tomorrow.
Facts. I mean, this Red Line is the aorta into the heart of Chicago. You know, I fall asleep on the Red. I love the Red Line, you know. So meet us tomorrow at 11 a.m. But you're right. It's all to make Chicago better. We need more people to look up from the train when they're riding the Red Line and see what they can learn from different people and the sites around you. Go grab a bite to eat in a neighborhood you've never been to before. Our best quality in this city is our diversity. And so step outside your comfort zone, have an appetite for adventure, and come out and help somebody that needs help in Chatham tomorrow. It's going to be great.
So you got a Facebook page for the event, and they can also they get a cool hat if they come, right? You're giving a little swag away.
Man, you already know. First 100 people come can get a hoodie. 100 people come get a hat. You know, but we also you can text shovel, the word shovel, to 55222 to find out more information. Again, you can text message shovel to 55222 to learn how you can to donate or volunteer. But the first 100 people, you already know you're getting a hoodie and a hat from My Block, My Hood, My City.
Jamal, some people that are listening now probably have never heard of the organization, and you don't have to rehash the whole history of it because we've done that plenty of times, you and I, on air. But you know, I just think that you know, in 30 seconds or a minute, you know, how can people get involved in what you do? And I mean, it's these tangible things. It's the cleanup things. It's the snow shoveling things that your organization do that really they just make such a big difference, man.
Yeah, well, my personal philosophy is democracy starts from the block level. It's not the city level inward. It's the block level outward. So instead of saying the city is messed up, the weather is messed up, the politicians are messed up, I think that philosophy is messed up. Instead of blaming things on other people, what's something simple you can make yourself do to have a positive impact? That's why we shovel snow. It's very simple. And if you start with the simple things, you develop the muscle it takes to take on the bigger challenges. So say hello to your neighbor. Start a block club on your block. Start a Facebook page for your block. When you do easy stuff like that, it creates a ripple effect throughout the city. So tomorrow we'll be hopefully creating that ripple effect. If you can't make it to 79th State, go shovel your neighbor's snow. Do the block if you can. You know, I think I want to see that kind of ripple effect happen throughout Chicago.
Man, you're absolutely right. There are some folks obviously listening to us from the far suburbs. They're not going to have a chance to make it in, but you're right. Even in your cul-de-sac, wherever you are, if you live in an apartment complex, help out your landlord, whatever you need. We're all in this together, Jamal.
True, man. It doesn't matter. You can, and if you can't make it, again, you can, again, text message shovel to 55222 and make a donation. Because, we're buying the salt, we're buying the gloves, we're buying the shovels. We're out here trying to help as many seniors as possible. And we have over 180 addresses to do tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to as much help as possible on 79th and State at 11 a.m. tomorrow.
Jamal, take it easy, all right? Thanks for calling in.
I love you, man. You have a good day.
You too. My block, my hood, my city. They do incredible work. Getting texts on where the snow has started. Started up in Genoa. That's from Karen B. Champ. I like that name. Out in Sycamore. Sick in Sycamore comes from the 630. No snow yet in Sycamore. Yeah, as I look at the radar, it's kind of like this thin line that's forming right now. Steve will have the whole update in the news, which is actually coming up in just a few moments. But yeah, 312-981-7200. I love that. What are some other things you can do? I hope shoveling your neighbor's snow is one of them. Maybe the sidewalks in front. Also, at this time, you're going to have some people, maybe if you're driving around in a Range Rover, you got a big truck or something like that. It happened down in Kansas City. One of the Chiefs players got pulled out of the snow, someone from a truck. If you're driving out there and you see someone spin off the road, maybe help them out, make sure that they're okay. It's the times like these. I mean, snow is that kind of common denominator that we all have to deal with. Rich, poor, black, white, gay, straight, doesn't matter. So, yeah, snow can be an opportunity for all of us to kind of come together. Yeah. 720 WGN, John Hanson in for John Williams until 3 o'clock here on this Friday afternoon. Lots going on in the city. We're obviously keeping track of that snowfall, which is making its way. We love to get the reports from you all out there. Everyone's a good weatherman today. 312, or woman, 312-981-7200. A lot of people saying bring it on. First light flakes right now falling in Elgin. South side of Sycamore, we're seeing a lot of snow right now, they say. And we hear of a 5K going on in St. Charles from the 630. They say my crazy friends will still be running in it. And Karen chimes in again, still snowing in Genoa. Thank you, Karen. We're also obviously following the big story, the sentencing trial. I'm having a hard time saying the word sentencing today. Sentencing trial of Jason Van Dyke, Officer Van Dyke, for the shooting of Laquan McDonald. Joining us to kind of chat through that is Lance Northcutt. Lance, you're a trial lawyer and partner at GWC Law Firm, a former Cook County prosecutor, former law enforcement officer, so you're the perfect man to talk to today.
Good to be here, Jack.
So, yeah, your background. Give us a little bit of, I mean, you're a Cook County prosecutor, you were a law enforcement. Give us a little bit of your background.
I worked as a prosecutor here in Cook County. I worked in the building that Jason Van Dyke was tried in, that he's at today, 26th Street. And I was also a detention officer in Naperville, and then for a small department, I was a part-time patrol officer. So I wore a few hats in my past life.
So what we're seeing here today is the sentencing trial. And when I think sentencing, I think of crying mothers of victims, and that's obviously notable for judges to hear, and the defense, the defendant himself standing up or herself standing up and giving their case. And I usually think they're pretty lickety-split. The judge makes his decision, and maybe that's just guided by what I see on TV and in the movies. What we're seeing today is different than that. We're seeing witnesses, cross-examinations, a lot of them. Explain what's happening.
It is, and you're not too far off in terms of what you see in the past based on TV. A lot of that is real. And when you see the crying mothers and the raw emotion, that usually is referred to as a victim impact statement. In a murder case, you've got the family of the victim that has, in Illinois at least, a constitutional right to come forward and talk about how this crime has impacted them personally. And those are very, very raw, very tough moments in a courtroom. And then conversely, you've got the opportunity, of course, for the defendant to step forward and present his remorse or any explanation they wish to offer. And so you very often get a tearful apology from the defendant. But what happens sometimes in cases, and this one is a perfect example, is you've got evidence that's being presented live through witnesses that really speaks to two different factors under the law, which is aggravation and mitigation.
Okay.
The state here has the obligation to show any aggravation evidence, meaning something that suggests that this case is more than just one aberrant.
Right, just happened out of the blue, yeah.
Yeah, because obviously if this is just someone that had a momentary lapse of judgment that lost his mind, that would go more in favor of the defendant. But if you can show a pattern, if you can show something that suggests that he's a violent person, that he's got a bad moral core, that's something that the state wants to seize on, and they have.
And a lot of these state witnesses, we talked to Stacey St. Clair earlier of the Tribune, I asked her, you know, why weren't these folks in the trial? And it's because they're not allowed on the trial, because the trial focuses just on that incident for the most part.
Absolutely. There's some notable exceptions, but generally speaking, under Illinois and federal law, you can't submit prior bad acts to show that because a person was bad before, he was bad this time. It's called improper character evidence. Sometimes, particularly in sex cases, you're allowed to bring that evidence in to show propensity. But here, there was obviously a pretty tight rein on what the jury heard.
Who are we going to hear from, do you think, from the defense attorney? Will Jason Van Dyke speak at some point?
It would be shocking if he didn't.
Okay.
Now, he's already testified, so the judge has a certain flavor in terms of what he believed at the time of the incident. But what he really needs to do, and the challenge for the defense today, is to humanize him. He needs to come across as a family man, and irrespective of the judgment that he showed on the date this happened, someone who loves his wife, loves his children, has provided for them, has given service to the community. He has got to really pierce through what seemed to be almost, I don't want to say an uncaring, but a very kind of tough-to-read veneer that he had when he testified.
So he's in his prison jumpsuit, a mustard yellow. He looks kind of unshaven. Some people might say, well, why didn't his defense attorneys make sure that he was wearing his suit, making sure he's clean-shaven? It's mainly because the presumption of innocence is gone. There's been a shift here.
Exactly. Once you're found guilty and the judge enters judgment on that finding, now you are no longer cloaked in the presumption of innocence. He is no longer innocent until proven guilty. He is now a convicted felon. And the only thing that is left to be done at this phase of the case is for the judge to impose sentence.
So we're moving forward here. Laquan McDonald's uncle is currently on the stand. He's reading a statement, then they'll probably have some questions back and forth. Then the defense is going to have their opportunity. What sorts of people are they going to, would you imagine, besides Laquan McDonald, or excuse me, pardon me, Jason Van Dyke speaking, relatives, letters of support, other police officers, what sorts of things do you expect to see?
Well, it's sort of a judgment call as to whether you'd want to call other police officers,
right,
given the circumstances here in the equities involved. One thing that another police officer could testify to is if he has any individual acts of heroism, of bravery, of things that you can talk about that don't involve the use of force. That is something that would be powerful evidence. But I think the one star witness, should they decide to produce this witness, is going to be Jason Van Dyke's wife. If they are able to present her as someone that can speak to his character, someone that can speak to his heart, someone that can put a humanizing face on what a lot of people are regarding as a monster, that could be very, very powerful testimony.
I don't know if this was brought up in the trial. I wasn't there every day following along, but the idea of this strenuous job that a police officer is, I mean, we can't forget that. I mean, it is a very difficult job. I'm not excusing what happened, not trying to make excuses for that. Is there any testimony that can go to that, or is that something that would have come up at trial instead of in the sentencing phase?
It wouldn't logically come up at trial because more often than not, a judge is going to exclude that type
okay.
of evidence. All evidence that gets heard in the trial phase when a jury is hearing the case has to be relevant only to the question of guilt or innocence. now that we're in sentencing, it could very well be relevant. Because one of the things that the judge is empowered to look at, and the judge here has broad discretion, are the circumstances under which Jason Van Dyke was placed when he showed up on that night. And the stress of a police officer and the environment that they're working in today's day and age is incredibly, incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
Because putting aside everything that he was convicted of and everything that we know through the video, there is an incredible amount of stress that's placed on any police officer, but particularly those that are working in some of the toughest areas of the city. And it's very difficult for people at a distance to appreciate that danger and that fear that every police officer has any time they pin on that badge.
Just went into a brief recess. I don't know if it's brief, actually. They're taking a break there at the courthouse. Don't know if they're finally calling their lunch break or what's going on or how long this will be, but just speaking to how long this could go for. And that's a question for you. You know, Stacey St. Clair touched on this, that, you know, the judge can keep the court going as long as he wants today, snowstorm or no snowstorm. They're ahead of a three-day weekend. You said something about me off-air that was surprising. This doesn't necessarily have to be resolved in the next few days.
No, absolutely not. I would anticipate, just knowing what I know of Judge Gaughan, that he is going to give both sides a full and fair opportunity to be heard. And there are practical reasons why he would do that, apart from just how he is as a judge. First of all, you don't want to create any issues for appeal if you're a judge. And you don't want one side, or in this case it would be the defense who could only appeal, to say, well, we had more stuff that we wanted to present and we were curtailed in our presentation.
So you want to give them as much time as they can to make their arguments.
Exactly. He needs to be able to speak from a position of knowledge, having heard all the arguments, weighing all the evidence, in aggravation mitigation as to what that final number is going to be. So it may not conclude today, or the presentation of the evidence may conclude today, and he may come back, adjourn the proceedings, and give his final determination some other time.
And that might argue, that might bother reporters who are hoping to file here before the weekend. It might bother media. It might bother the everyday people that just want to know the answer. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is getting this, at least as the judge feels, getting the right sentence here.
And this is not any ordinary case. I mean, apart from the extraordinary nature of what it means in Chicago and across the country, the legal issues here with sentencing are very, very challenging. And so there's no doubt that he's going to want to make sure that he gets this right, not only from the perspective of a moral judgment, but from a legal decision. And so that may take a little more time. And it is frustrating, and I will tell you, based on my own experiences, there is nothing more harrowing than waiting for that
agonizing
jury or that judge to come back. It is horrible.
Lance Northcutt, the trial lawyer and partner at GWC. Can you stay here for a little bit longer? I got some more questions.
Absolutely.
720 WGN, John Hanson in for John Williams until 3 o'clock. We're in recess right now in the Jason Van Dyke sentencing trial. We're also waiting on the snowfall. A lot more text coming in on where the snowfall is falling. We're hearing a light wet snow in Rockford. A lot of snow in Charter Grove, all other sorts of places. We'll keep you posted on that snowfall that's making its way. The winter storm warning doesn't start until 3 north of Interstate 88. Lance Northcutt, trial attorney at GWC, former Cook County prosecutor, former law enforcement officer. We're talking about what might happen today or over the weekend or after the weekend or in time. But I want to talk about a judge's mindset as he's sitting there today in sentencing. Obviously, you can't get in his mind specifically, but speak about the difficulties that a judge has. I mean, how hard, I mean, it must be impossible not to bring with it your own prejudices from the trial over to what you think you're going to rule. And then you hear new things today. So first question is, how much of what he is seeing today will play a role in his ultimate decision? I guess you can't say, but do you feel that judges sometimes know what they're going to do before they go into a sentencing procedure, or can they hit that reset button okay?
Well, I'm just cringing as I say this because I'm picturing 400 judges in Cook County just, you know, aghast at the idea of me talking about what judges think.
True.
But from my perspective, I think really a judge is going to absorb everything. I've been in front of Judge Gaughan. I have seen how he operates. And he is, even though he's a very tough judge, he's also a very thoughtful judge. He works very hard. And he's going to consider all this information. And it all does impact that final decision. I mean, he's going to look at everything the witnesses say. He's going to revert to what happened in the trial. And that very often has a huge impact The judge is well within his rights to talk about that, too. He can discuss how Jason Van Dyke testified, which is one of the risks of putting your client up there if you're the defense.
When you say discuss, you mean when he ultimately decides what he's going to do, almost like an explainer?
That's absolutely. Okay. And he can talk about that. And now we will hear, I imagine, from Judge Gaughan exactly what he thought of Van Dyke's explanations. And so if he thought that he was being sneaky, if he thought he was being disingenuous, all that's going to come out, and that could harm him. And so from a judge's perspective, you're looking at the whole universe. The extent to which a judge may be influenced by factors outside the courtroom, that's another story.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, there a lot of eyes, not just in Chicago, but the country are on this trial. They were made national news headlines, as it should have when the verdict was reached. Obviously, we've seen trials like this before spark demonstrations. We didn't have any of any high note after the verdict was reached. You could after the sentencing, depending on which way it goes. How do you tune out that noise? Is it possible for a judge not to just tune that all out and do his job, which is to focus on the case at hand?
It is. And I think we saw some of that yesterday in terms of a judge making a decision that's going to have blowback that might be unpopular in terms of how it's reported in the media and in public sentiment. Judge Gaughan is, to put it mildly, a fiercely independent judge. And I don't believe, based on things that I've seen in the past, that he is going to be swayed one way or the other by public opinion. And I say that with the recognition that, you know, all judges are human beings. Mm-hmm. And they hear things, they see things. There is pressure, a great deal of pressure, for any judge in a high-profile case. But the pressure on this is unlike anything I think a judge in Cook County has experienced, in at least as long as I've been practicing.
You mind if we take a quick phone call? We got a good question on the line. We're going to go to Brett. Brett, you're on 720 WGN. You got a question for Lance?
Yeah, I do. Good afternoon, guys. Quick comment first. How ironic that these two verdicts yesterday and today happen on the eve of Martin Luther King weekend.
Yeah.
Memorial weekend.
Yep.
My question is there any possibility, or what percentage of possibility is there, that city leaders, both political and in the criminal justice system, and maybe even the mayor's office, have gotten together with this judge, being that it is a weekend? I mean, this is a trivial question, but being that it is a weekend, what time the verdict is going to come down?
You're saying, like, to pressure them, you know, to sway either the timing of the decision to coincide with the way to keep the city safe? Is that what you're kind of asking?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The potential fallout, both negatively and or positively, and how the city is going to be congested because of that.
Interesting.
Does any discussion go into account?
An interesting question. Brett, Lance, what do you think?
Yeah, Brett, I think it's something that really takes place, not necessarily a coordination between the judge and the city leaders, but it's something that's going to take place between law enforcement and city leaders in recognition that this is going on. Anytime there's a major event, whether it's a Bulls championship, a Cubs championship, because it's the Cubs who win championships, by the way.
Woo! I like you, Lance.
I just needed to get that in there.
I appreciate that. But this is a White Sox station, though, so they're doing a nice rebuild. We love it for them.
Okay, all right? I understand. Yeah. I'm, as long as it's a Chicago team, I'm happy. But they're going to know exactly what's going on in the proceedings, and they're going to be planning for any contingency. So I think that the judge is certainly going to make it known through public filings and through things that he says in court as the various phases, and we will know, you know, if a decision is going to be delayed, we'll know that too. But that's something that the city leaders and law enforcement would have a heads up on, and they would plan for that.
I wanted to break through the discussion that happened earlier in the sentencing talk today. It was a little confusing. Stacey did a great job trying to make me understand. So we've got two different things. We've got a second-degree murder charge, and we've got aggravated battery with a firearm.
Correct.
And the idea is that there was a discussion on which one holds greater weight. And the reasoning for that is because of the minimal allowed sentencing for each of those charges and the flexibility the judge may have in ruling between the two of them. Walk us through this.
Right. And this is a very fascinating piece of criminal law, if this is the kind of stuff that you're into talking about.
Yeah, I always am. I hope the listeners are.
But it really what it comes down to is you've got a number of different charges that fall into one of two categories. You've got second-degree murder, which it seems crazy to hear, but is actually eligible for probation if you're convicted.
Is it because they can take in the circumstances in which the murder happened?
Exactly. Because in a second-degree murder charge, you've got to actually prove first-degree murder, but there has to be evidence, more probably true than not, that the person had a belief that they were under threat of great bodily harm or death, but that threat was unreasonable. That belief was unreasonable.
So the first part is still that reasonable beyond a shadow of a doubt for first-degree murder, and then it's a 50-50 split for the second-degree murder.
Exactly. Okay. So basically, when someone gets a second-degree murder conviction, there's already been a finding by the jury that the elements of first-degree murder have been met, but the person had an unreasonable belief that their lives were in danger. That's how you get there. So if you think about the extenuating circumstances, and you've seen this sometimes before in domestic violence situations where an abused spouse basically has enough and says, I've got to kill my husband to get away from this. Mm-hmm. But under the specific facts, it was an unreasonable belief.
Right.
There's been a lot of published cases like that. That's second-degree murder. Aggravated battery with a firearm is something completely different. It's what's called a Class X felony. It's punishable from 6 to 30 years. And under the law, it's technically a more serious violation. But here, the state was very clever, the special prosecutor, in charging 16 individual counts of aggravated battery with a firearm for each and every shot. And that adds a layer of complexity to this that makes the sentencing range really up in the air.
Right. Lance, I'm going to let you go for now. We're going to take a quick break, and then we got the news. I hate to make you stay around, but in case we get a sentencing, can we get you something in the green room, in the PPG Paints green room, to have you stick around?
Absolutely. I'll be good.
All right. Thanks, Lance. So we'll say goodbye for now, and maybe we'll talk to you before the end of the show again. Coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, Steve Bertrand's got the stories that matter on 720 WGN.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Hate to start you on a lie. It's John Hansen here today on your Friday afternoon, and a busy one at that. We're tracking that snow. We're getting some pictures. 312-981-7200. The snow falling in a lot of places now. I thought I saw some snowflakes just a few moments ago here downtown. Looks like they're, all right, yeah, I can see it. Light flurries downtown on our way to 10 inches. Obviously keeping track of the Jason Van Dyke sentencing trial as well. I asked Lance Northcutt. He's going to stick around from GWC as well. But I want to get right to the phone line. Eric Rung. Eric, you've been there all morning long for WGN News. Eric, can you hear me?
I can.
Eric, it's been an emotional day of testimony. I just wanted to get some of your thoughts. As we've been watching on the feed, I've almost become overcome with emotion. I mean, there's been some really personal testimony. What has your reaction been to it inside the courtroom? Is the tension as palpable as it seems on television?
It actually is in this case. I mean, there's no question about it that it was a very emotional first half of this sentencing hearing. Probably some of the most emotional testimony came from 49-year-old Edward Nance, who from about the moment he stepped onto the witness stand was in tears, almost shaking, because of his experience. He said when he was pulled over by Jason Van Dyke several years ago, said he's had several surgeries because of the pain that he received during an arrest, basically, with Jason Van Dyke, with his shoulder surgeries. He didn't even want to look at Jason Van Dyke when the prosecution asked him to point him out in the courtroom. And of course, right before we went to break there, we heard from Laquan McDonald's great uncle, who has been speaking with the public here as this trial has moved forward, kind of the family spokesperson, if you will. And he read a statement, a victim impact statement, but he wrote it as if it was being written by Laquan McDonald. It was his words, but he wrote it in the first person as if he was Laquan McDonald. And he said that Jason Van Dyke murdered him and that he should not go free when he no longer has a life. It was very, very emotional, and that is what the prosecution ended this portion of the sentencing hearing with, Very powerful. And, of course, the first witness that they brought in was another person that had been pulled over by Jason Van Dyke several years ago. He said during a traffic stop, Jason Van Dyke walked up to the car, put a gun to his head, and also used the N-word in that exchange on a traffic stop. That's what they opened with. They closed with Laquan McDonald's great uncle on the stand saying that Jason Van Dyke really robbed the teenager of his life.
Eric, I don't know if you've gotten a chance to look over at Jason Van Dyke at all. The cameras that we see are only pointed at what's happening on the stand or what the lawyers are arguing. Have you gotten any sense from body language or anything what might be going through his head? Obviously, you don't want to speculate, but can you give any sense of the feeling in the courthouse, certainly on the side of the defense table?
He looks exactly like he has throughout this trial, just a very stoic look. Occasionally, he'll maybe say a few words to his attorneys. He is taking notes as some of the witnesses are speaking. But for the most part, he just kind of looks down and doesn't have any real facial expressions at all on his face, regardless of what is being said. I mean, he is paying attention. You can tell that because he is taking notes. However, you can't see anything, even try to really read what's going on through his mind because he just no facial expressions whatsoever. At one point, one of the witnesses actually, when he was asked to identify Jason Van Dyke, he pointed over to the defense table and he kind of smiled and he said, well, he's wearing the right attire. And that, of course, meaning that he was in, Department of Corrections uniform. And Jason Van Dyke did look up at that point, but didn't make any facial expressions toward the witness and really has remained stoic throughout this trial and now the sentencing hearing as well.
Eric, obviously, if you got to go, you got to go. I understand. But I just wanted to ask, do we have any sense, was Laquan McDonald's great uncle the last witness they're going to bring? Do we have any sense if the prosecution is done and we're ready to get the defense witnesses next?
The prosecution is done. That was their last witness. They did enter a few other victim impact statements into the record, but they weren't read into the record. So now it will be the defense's turn. There is a good chance that we will hear from Jason Van Dyke's wife, at least one of his daughters. Both are in the courtroom today. There is a good chance that we may also hear from his father, who has been by his side throughout this entire trial. And then we will hear from Jason Van Dyke himself. He will be given the opportunity to make a statement before the judge does hand down his sentence in this case. Now, what we've been told and what we've heard from the defense is that their presentation will likely go about an hour. That was a ballpark figure that they gave the judge. So it could go a little longer, obviously, could go a little shorter, but we are at least looking at another hour once we get back from lunch here in about 15 to 20 minutes.
Eric, I know the defense has a difficult role. They obviously want to, when you've got witnesses on the stand who are emotional, you never want to discredit that emotion, but you're also trying to poke holes or cause the judge to maybe doubt some of their testimony. Have they been effective at that, or does it seem like, from mine, that it is a struggle for attorneys to thread that needle?
Yeah, I would say it's very hard to tell. I mean, I think one of the lines of questioning that Dan Herbert, Van Dyke's attorney, has really gone after has been to say, well, your memory was better then than it is now. Is that right? And, of course, everybody's memory was better when the incident actually happened than, in some cases up to 10 years later. That's one line of questioning that he's going after. The other is presenting them with the complaints that they filed at that time and asking them to go ahead and take a look at those complaints. And in some cases, there were differing facts as far as what they told the investigating officers at that time and what they were testifying to today. Whether or not that's effective or not, that obviously is going to be up to the judge. I mean, some lines of questioning, just sitting in the audience and listening to the experience, you understood what Herbert was trying to do.
Right.
Was to try and make it look like he's, getting two stories out of these people. But yeah, the judge is obviously going to have to take a look at that statement and then what was said in court today under oath, mind you, and decide what is more credible.
Yeah, Eric, you're doing great work there. We really appreciate it. We'll let you get back to it, Eric Rung, and obviously call on in if you got anything else for us. Okay.
You got it, John.
All right, we are keeping track of the snowfall. We're keeping track of everything else. And, of course, the Jason Van Dyke sentencing trial. Lance Northcutt of GWC, former Cook County prosecutor and a law enforcement official yourself. We were talking during the break. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And Eric kind of touched on this idea. Now that we're going to hear from his family, most likely Jason, Officer Van Dyke himself. You know, now that he's been found guilty, is a judge looking for a remorseful tone, or is hellfire and brimstone, I am not guilty of this, you know, in terms of this is how I acted? I mean, what do you expect, not necessarily Jason Van Dyke to say, but what are his lawyers, do you think, advising him to do? What walk us through that process.
The smart play here is going to be remorse. It's going to be sympathy, because if he goes in and tries to relitigate the same losing strategy that got him convicted in the first place, he's going to hit a wall with Judge Gaughan. And a judge is going to be given a platform to say this is precisely the unremorseful, you know, automaton that we need to punish. He just doesn't get it, and I need to send a message to him. You don't want to go there. Having family members testify and humanize him is critical, because candidly, his presentation in front of the jury did not come across as somebody that was warm and fuzzy. Someone else has got to do that for him. And so his wife, his daughter has got to carry that weight right now and somehow get to the judge that this is someone worthy of redemption. This is not someone that we want to punish. This is an aberrant mistake. And don't ruin all of our lives because of it. That's the emotional play the defense has to make.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see exactly what happens. Because, you know, this is completely unrelated and it has nothing to do with this trial. But and wasn't a trial, in fact, at all. But when Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court was, everyone thought he was dead in the water after the testimony of, and I'm sorry for forgetting the woman's name, who bravely spoke in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. But he came out hellfire and brimstone, and I guess the jury then was the American public, and it made a difference. So I don't know, and I mean, obviously they're very different circumstances, but can that be an effective strategy to show that passion, to show, you know, it's unfortunate what happened to this young man. No one deserves necessarily that fate, but in that moment, I was thinking of my kids. I was thinking of going home to my wife. Is that effective? Could that be?
It could be. I will say that the experience of Brett Kavanaugh in defending himself and beer as a general thing is going to be very different. It's a different audience.
Yeah.
Here, you have got to somehow, first of all, take the blow out of what the prosecution has done as far as the impactful testimony and the, you know, the great granduncle of the of Laquan McDonald. You've got to come back now and really have this judge thinking when he announces that number about this wife, this family. You've got to refocus attention. And so relitigating that issue and the fear is probably not where he wants to be. What he really needs to do is talk about what a good person he is outside of this. The last thing, if I were defending this, I would want to be talking about is the day itself. It's an entire life that he gets to view, not just the prism of a single individual day and what he did to get himself convicted.
The caller mentioned the ruling that came out yesterday, and this is all leading in through MLK weekend, the coincidence of that. There was no reason, there's no like timetable in terms of why these two decisions are coming so close together back to back. They were completely separate cases, right? It just happened to fall Thursday, Friday, back to back.
Absolutely, and it's the strangest of coincidences, and the fact that it falls close to the Martin Luther King weekend is pretty eerie when you think through it, because race permeates everything in modern policing today. I mean, the changes that we've seen in society, the problem of violence, how we cope with it, how we police it, how we prevent it, race is an undercurrent to everything. And so it's kind of, I guess, fitting that it's all coming to a head now.
Lance, I'm going to let you maybe take another breather as well. We're going to change gears in just a little bit. I got to thank you so much for stopping by and for hanging out with us again. Lance, you're from GWC. We really appreciate your time today.
Thanks, John.
720 WGN, John Hanson in for John Williams until 3 o'clock. And every time I say goodbye to Lance Northcutt, I say hello from GWC, because we are getting questions on the text line. And actually, I encourage folks, 312-981-7200, call and text in your questions. This comes from the 847 about the two sentencing hearings. Why were none of the judges African-American. And as far as I believe, Lance, it's the same judge, trial for sentencing no matter what, right?
Right. Once a defendant is assigned to a particular judge, that judge would preside over both the trial and the sentence.
Mm-hmm. And in determining the trial judge, how is that done?
That's done randomly. It's basically done by a computerized pick. Every case that goes into 26th Street goes to the chief judge, or the presiding judge, I should say, and then it's assigned out from there. And so it's basically a luck of the draw type of thing.
So certainly nothing to do with the race, of course, with assigning that.
Absolutely not. And there's, you know, the presiding judge is African-American. There's a number of African-American judges. It just happens to be who gets the judge based on the day.
Thanks, Lance. I'm not even going to say goodbye anymore. You're going to be on with another question. But before we get to the news, Elif, we got to work in the news click. So why don't you tell us what our last news click was?
All right.
And welcome to the program, by the way, Elif. She's done so much work juggling today. You're doing a great job, Elif. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Likewise. It's a crazy day.
It really is. Okay, what do we got?
So yesterday's news click was the State of the Union.
Okay.
The State of the Union address should ... A, go on as scheduled, got 27%.
Okay, about a quarter of the people, okay.
B, be postponed, 48%. Or C, be canceled, we shouldn't have them, 25%.
Well, legally we have to have them. Not necessarily a speech. The Constitution requires that the president from time to time, I believe it's called, he shall from time to time, let Congress know what's happening. I think he obligates, he can fulfill that obligation by sending a letter. I believe it was Washington and Adams, the first and second president, who delivered speeches in front of the Congress. Then Jefferson started the tradition of writing them on in, and that continued to Woodrow Wilson, who then started delivering the speeches once again. Then you get the era of radio and television, of course, and presidents now see it as a great opportunity to spread their message. I gotta say that obviously we had the retort from the president in the form of the effective canceling of Nancy Pelosi's trip. A lot of people, a lot of my friends, liberal friends, offended by it. I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of President Trump, but I thought it was a real cool tit for tat. Maybe it was a little beneath the presidency, you should say, but let's not kid ourselves. Nancy Pelosi was acting politically as well when she tried to postpone the State of the Union. Thanks for that news click. We're kind of waiting to see if we're going to have another one, right? Because, Elif, if we do get a verdict, we might do a news click based on that or a sentence. So no news click as of right now, but we'll keep you posted throughout the day. Seven twenty WGN and a good Friday afternoon, wherever you may roam. John Hanson in for John Williams until 3 o'clock, and that snow certainly is falling. It's a perfect weekend to maybe put on the pajamas whenever you get home this evening, and don't take them off until you got to go back to work on Monday. My plan is to not leave the house all that much if I can avoid it, and just kind of cuddle in. It's a great weekend to do that. I love any weekend you can do that, but this one you kind of have a built-in excuse. 312-981-7200, still getting the text, just started snowing in Maywood as the snow continues to move to the southeast and to the south, and looking like everyone's starting to see some snow except the south suburbs and northwest Indiana, but do not worry, it is coming. All right, we've been talking about the Van Dyke sentencing hearing, and we're going to take a break from that for a bit. Of course, we will keep you updated if we hear anything new or anything consequential. Of course, if we hear the sentence itself, we'll bring that to you here on WGN, and we'll keep you updated on the snow. Keep on chiming in, 312-981-7200. Let us know what the snow is like in your area and maybe what your plans are for the weekend, which will be a snowy, blustery, cold weekend at that. But changing gears a little bit, I want to introduce you to Katie Yeo. She runs an incredible organization called Able Ensemble. Katie, thanks for joining us here on 720 WGN once again.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Are you all hunkered into the house right now?
Yeah, I'm watching carefully. We actually have we have workshops tonight with our actors, so I'm hoping that I can get out of the house.
Fingers so crossed. I think you'll be okay, at least in the early evening hours. So you mentioned your actors and you run a theater ensemble, but this one's a little bit different than maybe some of the traditional ones you see around the area. Walk us through who your actors and actresses are.
Yeah, well, Able works with a range of actors with Down syndrome and other developmental differences. Tonight's sessions are with some of our teen ensembles, who are ages 14 to 21. And then we also have adult ensembles working with individuals from that population, ages 22 and up.
I think it's an incredible organization. You know, I think that. But I wanted to see if you could share with our listeners Why you and Lawrence created Able Ensemble? What's your background and how did you get on this?
Yeah, so I, you know, I have a theater background. That was my, you know, I grew up doing theater in high school and I was in show choir in middle school and all that good stuff. And I went to Syracuse for my bachelor's in acting. And Syracuse University has a program that's now called the All-Star Cast. It was called something different during my tenure there, way a long time ago.
Yeah, right.
They partner undergrad acting students with individuals from the community, from the Syracuse community with disabilities. And it was just a really valuable experience for me. And I loved it so, so much. And after a couple years, just, you know, doing the actor's life and auditioning and all of that, I kind of fell into volunteering here in the city with an organization called Gigi's Playhouse and figured out the way to sort of combine my theater love with this sort of larger purpose, because that's what I think I felt like I was missing, just kind of digging around and doing all the headshots and auditions and all of that stuff. I felt like I kind of lost sense of a why. So it was great to combine my two loves. And Lawrence, who you mentioned, who's now my husband, at the time we were dating, newly dating, and I brought him into rehearsal. I decided as my first show to do Romeo and Juliet because that would be easy.
Oh, right. Yeah, and Shakespeare to start off, yeah.
Yeah, Shakespeare will be easy. So I brought Lawrence in to teach some basic sword fighting skills. He's an actor as well. And he just kind of fell in love with it. So he and I have started this kind of crazy journey of building our own nonprofit and running all of these sessions and putting on even more Shakespeare and all different shows and movies and all sorts with this great crew.
I think I took it for granted I was a theater kid, which will probably come as no surprise to our WGN listeners and people that watch me on WCIU. But, you know, I just grew up in Downers Grove and we had theater classes growing up and we had them in high school. And I just, you know, you kind of just assume that everyone has that opportunity. But for a lot of folks, especially those with different abilities, that certainly isn't a window that's open to them. It must be rewarding to give students and young adults the opportunity to do that. But it's more than just what happens on the stage or on the movies that you do. The skills that they learn and the social situations that they get to be in this sort of Able Ensemble, those things translate to their lives at home and in school, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think anybody who has that kind of creative arts background can attest to that, right? But it's about so much more than just the thing, than just the piece that you're working on. And all of these theater games, you know, theater games, we call them games, but I think they're really serious in terms of learning skills like eye contact and listening and teamwork and communicating, whether you're verbally a verbal communicator or a nonverbal communicator, you know, ways to get your point across, and emotional literacy as well, right? How to process feelings and deal with some bigger feelings that might come up, you know, and you get to explore that safely through a character. So I think it's all really important. And for our guys, you know, what I think is great about Able is that we are giving everybody a chance to do some of these larger roles. You know, a lot of our actors are now in mainstream schools and that's fantastic. And they might be in theater programs at school too, but they'll be kind of relegated to the background. You know, I was pointing to one of our actors when we did Wizard of Oz, she was Dorothy and mm-hmm. she was the Wicked Witch of the West because she had two different scenes for us.
Uh-huh.
And then they did Wizard of Oz at school and she was a flying monkey the whole time. And it's like, you know what? There's so much more to you than that.
Right.
So trying to bring some opportunities for everybody, you know, to show all these different sides of their personality and explore different sides of their personality. And I love theater. I could gush about it all day long.
Right. But yeah, it's amazing. And like you mentioned, you've had actors in the past, and some of these students are maybe not the most verbal. I mean, they might be nonverbal and they encounter difficulties, of course, with their different abilities. With Down syndrome, there's a lot of course, challenges. But, you know, you've had moms and parents that have come to you and said, he is a different person now since he's gone through this.
Yeah, and I think it's just giving room and giving space for everybody to communicate in whatever way is best for them. But we've had each actor that's with us is working on a different set of goals. You know, everybody's, and that's, I think that's true for every human you're going to meet
right.
anywhere. But you know, we're all working on a different set of things. We've all got a different list of, you know, what we think could make us the best us. And it's just trying to tap into that for each individual person who's with us. And I love those moments when parents tell us they were surprised by something they saw, or, you know, people who live day in, day out with these people see them on stage and say, you know, I've never seen that side of her, or I've never seen her do that, or they're participating more here than they have anywhere else. I think we're able to tap into some great stuff and some nice deep stuff for people. And I think that there's a lot of social support there too, right? Because they're in an environment with other people who are like them. So it's an equalizer in the room as well, right? Like mm-hmm. if you're in our rehearsal space, you look around, your disability is not the thing that's going to make you different in that room, whereas it might be the only thing that people are seeing in many other spaces that you're in.
I've got a text I wanted to know. Again, we're talking with Katie O of Able Ensemble, an organization that works with kids and young adults, actually teens and young adults, with Down syndrome and other different abilities. They want to know, does Able work in the schools? How does that work in terms of finding your actors or your teachers? This teacher specifically says, or she has a teaching group at Lane Tech, and they want to connect with you. How does it work? What are the nuts and bolts?
Well, we have a couple different branches of our program. So we have our core ensemble program, which we run with different partners, theater partners around the city. So we have a great friendship with Chicago Shakespeare Theater, and we'll do performances with them. So we have those kind of weekly sessions that individuals can sign up for and register for independently. Then we also have our outreach programming, and that is where we'll send in a pair of our teaching artists and some of our veteran actors to lead workshops, either one-time workshops or longer, anywhere from 4 to 12-week residencies. So we just did one of those with the PACE program at National Lewis University. We're working with Vaughn Occupational High School right now to try to get something set up with them. So there are opportunities on kind of both sides. We can come to you, or if you have an individual you think would be really well suited for us, they can come to us directly.
You mentioned Friday that you have a workshop tonight, and were there?
Yeah.
I just wanted to build on one point you've made to me earlier about it, that, you know, like these students that have Down syndrome, they're in their classrooms and they're talking with, you know, they're talking with other students, and other students say, I go into this party tonight, or I got this thing, especially on a Friday, you know, the high school students talk to each other what their plans are for the weekend. And, you know, some of the students with Down syndrome may not have as big of a social circle, or they may not be able to go out and do as many things, I guess you could say. I hope that doesn't sound too offensive, but I guess you know what I mean. They may not have quite the calendar that some of these other students might have. This gives every student something that they can brag about and say that they're doing this weekend and be excited about it.
Yeah, we try to be we are obviously a creative outlet, and that's the crux of what we're doing, but it's really important that we're a social outlet as well. And I think especially when you're dealing with our teen ensembles, it is such a, there's so many changes and things happening, and it's an important time to know you've got something consistent that you can count on, where you're going to see people who are all, you know, of a like mind and working towards a similar goal. I think that's really important. And I think it's a social event, not just for our actors, but for their families as well. Like, we'll step into rehearsal and the parents go to the bar across the street, or they'll go out to dinner with each other, or they just sit and kind of talk in the lobby of the studio where we rehearse. Like, you know, it's an important thing for everyone who's involved, for all of our volunteers. You know, we're a very tight-knit community. All of these families have been very tight-knit, and then all of our actors obviously adore each other. So
where can people find out more information about Able Ensemble?
Well, ableensemble.com is our website, so you can follow, you can kind of meet all of our team on there, and we have our blog linked on our website as well if you want to kind of follow us through our rehearsal processes. We're also on Facebook and Instagram as Able Ensemble, and YouTube as well.
Are the classes full? Are the classes and workshops full right now? Do you have any openings for any more actors? How does that work?
Our teen ensembles, unfortunately, it kills me to say that our teen ensembles are waitlist only, but our adult ensembles, which are for actors 22 and up, do have plenty of spaces available for our adult ensembles, which will start up in mid-February on Tuesdays. And this workshop series that we kick off tonight is open to anybody, and we still have tons of spaces available for tonight is physical theater, next Friday is puppetry, and then the week after that is a classical theater workshop. And that all of that information you can register on our website, ableensemble.com.
KDO, it's an amazing organization. Thanks for sharing it with the WGN listeners, okay?
John, thank you so much. So nice to talk to you.
Yeah, we'll chat soon. Okay. 720 WGN, John Hanson in for John Williams on this Friday afternoon. Just a few minutes left here in the show. Of course, we're talking about the snow, what you're doing this weekend, as we continue to look at what's happening in the Jason Van Dyke sentencing trial. I believe they're on another recess. They came back for just a little bit. I think, I don't even know if a witness was called or not. We've got it on CLTV here on the TV. And of course, we're going to bring it to you. That'll continue into the afternoon and early evening. Again, no guarantee that we're going to get a sentencing here by the end of the day today. Both Stacey St. Clair and, of course, we had Lance Northcutt talking about that from GWC. A lot of people think that we will. Eric Rung mentioned earlier, in case you missed it, that the prosecution will probably call maybe an hour's worth of witnesses. Jason Van Dyke's wife is in the courtroom right now, as is one of her kids, his kids, their kids. And then whether Jason Van Dyke himself will take the stand seems likely, but maybe an hour. And then we'll kind of wait to see from there what's going on. But 312-91-7200, it's snowy. We want to know what you're doing this weekend. 630 texted in, listening to Over the Rhine, which is a group out of Cincinnati. Snowed in with you, perfect for the weekend. And 630 just said, I'm going to be sitting in guilt-free. So at LF, these people, I know it's snowy, but we should get out there still, right? We should get out there. So we're going to figure out the events this weekend. Cue the music, LF. And what are we listening to here right now?
Well, this is Erica Badu. She'll be playing the Aragon Ballroom tomorrow at 8. Tickets are $59 on Ticketmaster.
Tomorrow at 8 at the Aragon. Okay, so the snow's supposed to stop, early afternoon. So we'll have some time to clear the roads. We might get some lake effect snow, and I think the Aragon might get some of that on the north side. But that's okay. Brave it. Go out there. See some music. You have all day Sunday to sit in your couch and watch football. All right, what else we got?
You want to go next?
Oh, do I go next?
Yeah.
Sorry. This is my first time doing this.
It's not your fault.
I know. It's okay.
It's a crazy day.
All right. It has been a crazy day. Can I talk about Silent Party Chicago? What is Silent Party Chicago? Do you even know, Ella, for now?
It's a dance party with DJs.
And do they wear headphones and it's a silent dance party? Is that what one of those are or no? Is it just a DJ called Silent Party Chicago? Have you heard of those where everyone wears the headphones and no one actually hears music and they just dance by themselves?
I've done that before. It's really fun.
Really? It seems really stupid to me. I'm sorry to say.
No, it's really, really fun.
Really?
Yeah.
Why don't you just listen to the music? Why do you gotta have your headphones on and have silence in the room?
Maybe because it's so close to your ear, it's more intimate to you. I don't know.
It just moves you. All right, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to call it stupid, but Silent Party Dance. I should now have to go as a punishment for saying that. It's at the Promontory at 10 tonight. Tickets are $15. The show is for folks 21 and up. And for more information, visit silentchicago.com. What else we got, Elif?
We've got Sam Trump playing the California Clipper tonight at 10:30.
Sam Trump?
Yes.
Any relation
to our president? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Man, I guess it could bring a certain crowd out. I mean, unfortunate or fortunate name, depending on who you ask. Sam Trump, yeah. Okay, playing at the California Clipper.
It looks like it's a $5 cover. It says admission is free, but for more information, visit do312.com/the California Clipper.
You ever been to the Clipper?
No,
it's
I haven't.
It's a great venue just north of Augusta in California. In the Ukrainian Village, East Humble Park neighborhood. Cool place, great music, small venue for local music. That's good stuff. All right, I'll take the next one. Bachata Brunch? Bachata Brunch? Hopefully Bachata is some sort of a... Actually, I don't know. It's 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Sunday at Latinicity's third floor. It's free. Bottomless brunch and on-site salsa. Man, nothing like bottomless mimosas and a whole lot of salsa to get through a snowy weekend. You can visit block37.com/bachatabrunch. B-A-C-H-A-T-A. That sounds like fun, Ella. You're just playing the music. What else you got? What else you got coming this weekend?
We've got Tarzan, a play at the Magical Starlight Theater at Naperville Central High School.
Ooh.
Tickets start at $12. And
what's that music? Oh, I heard a little...
That was from the music.
Oh, okay. It's like someone's yelling at you. A little line from the play.
I was like, who's yelling at me from the newsroom? It's $12 at visitnaperville.com.
Naperville Central High School. Great school. Go out there and support the fine arts. I was at Homewood Flossmoor this morning for the jam on WCIU. We were previewing our game of the week. And it was so cool, Elif. The first thing we did on the show was we visited. They have an auto shop at Homewood Flossmoor High School. Like a big garage where they still work on cars. They build like a race car. They race their cars up in Rockford. And it was like coming out of a classroom from the 50s where they used to have more automotive classes in high schools. You don't see that as much anymore. And it was really cool. It was a group of like 10 or 15 guys and one girl that was leading us through the whole thing. It was really cool. And they've got a great fine arts program as well. Shout out to Homewood Flossmoor.
That's clever.
It was great. It was really cool. I mean, we talk about the basketball game, and that's what we're there for, but I love visiting the fine arts person as a former Downers Grove South fine arts person myself.
Oh.
I'm going to give a shout out to the Blackhawks. They're hosting the Capitals, and they must be the NBC game of the week because they're at 11:30 in the morning at United Center, and tickets start at $45 on Ticketmaster. Pre-game, yeah, we keep on hearing those interruptions. Thanks. Pre-game's at 11 o'clock with Chris Bowden on WGN. So go to the game if you can, but if you can't, of course, listen to it on WGN Radio. Two more, you said, Elif? We got time for two more?
Can I just testify, Officer?
Yes, you can go ahead.
So I found out at the very last second about Erykah Badu, and I threw this thing together, so I'm sorry about that.
That we have random whispering going
but
on in the background?
There are no profanities. I checked on that, so we're good on that front.
Hey, 815 wants to know, I broke my foot on Monday. I'm wondering if I can still shovel. No, stay in. You broke your foot. You have deserved to let that thing just wait till it melts. Just stay in your house.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
So the person with the broken foot is not going where, Elif? Where are they not? What are they missing out on this weekend?
Sorry, but you're going to miss the Northwestern Winter Chamber Music Festival.
Oh.
With Gryphon Trio at Pick Stager Concert Hall in Evanston tonight at 7:30. Tickets are $30 on music.northwestern.edu.
Oh, I'm sorry that that guy's going to miss that, or girl's going to miss that. Poor broken foot. If you're gonna, I guess in the summer you don't want to break your foot because you miss all the fun activities out in the summer. But winter with the snow, walking around with crutches, the slipperiness. Yeah. My thoughts out to that person. All right, I'll do the last one. Black Creativity Family Day is at the Museum of Science and Industry. That's on Monday on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, of course, to celebrate Black creativity and innovation. It's included in the entry fee, so it'll cost you about $22 if you're an adult. 13 for kids, so that's affordable. And for more information, visit msichicago.org. So that's what you got to do this weekend. All right, coming up, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We'll have that in a bit on 720 WGN. That'll do it for me, John Hanson, and for John Williams. Don't worry, if you miss John, he's on tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. And, of course, back again next week. The snow is coming. Rowan, Anna, I don't know, you guys are scheduled to only do a couple hours, but maybe you'll get snowed in, be here all weekend. I don't know.
You know, that's our plan. I
just
don't
order some pizza, have
right.
some beers.
Well, John, you've been by the office, right?
Right.
You've seen my office.
Yes.
We're properly
well stocked.
You're well stocked
for these occasions, right?
Anything that could happen. We got whiskey. We got nuts,
right?
And then we also have edible nuts too. So that's
right. We're nuts and we have nuts,
mm-hmm. right?
Both.
Luckily, it's a slow news day. Nothing to talk about, right? Oh
yeah.
My goodness!
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, we're watching the. What's going on in the courtroom where the sentencing of Jason Van Dyke is going to take place at some point this afternoon, we assume.
You think, yeah.
So we'll take you there during the sentencing when that happens. But before that, we got a lot going on, too. Demetrius Ivory is going to get us ready for the storm that's moving in. And Mark McKinnon's going to join us. Talk about this bombshell in BuzzFeed.
Oh, yeah.
That Michael Cohen claims that Donald Trump... asked him to lie. He instructed him as his attorney to lie to Congress about the Trump Tower Moscow.
Yeah, a lot of headlines calling that maybe the smoking gun. I don't know. I'll have to listen on my drive on home.
Yeah, you do that because Mark McKinnon, he's got a smoking hat. And he knows exactly how to handle these things.
Have a good show.
And CC Sunshine counts your money. Also at 340. Thank you, John.